Hello and welcome to OU's Nach Yomi. You can find this year posted at ouradio.org/nach or on my website, ericlevy.com, under the recording section.
This is Rabbi Eric Levy, and I am pleased to bring to you Tehillim Lamed Hey, Psalm 35. Before actually translating the Tehillah, I would like to talk a little bit about something called form criticism, which is an important tool for understanding Tehillim in general. Now, the word criticism, of form criticism, is not a well-liked term, to say the least, especially by those who study Tanakh, the Bible, with the belief that these books are holy and inspired or downright prophetic. However, the ill-liked criticism that people usually refer to is usually something called higher or lower textual criticism, and more specifically the famous or infamous, depending on your point of view, documentary hypotheses. But form criticism has little or nothing to do with lower and higher criticism. In lower and higher criticism, scholars really approach the Bible with a pen and scissor and eraser in hand, and to a certain degree they reshape the Bible in their own image based on their own very subjective point of view. Form criticism, which I'd like to talk about today, really its job is to approach the text by identifying the genre of any given section of the Bible, and in Tehillim specifically, based on that genre, one can then analyze certain elements that are in that section of the biblical text. Or actually, it works vice versa. If one could identify certain formal elements, then one could discern the genre and therefore the intent of what the author had in mind. Here's a modern example, because I'm using lots of big words, and a modern example will explain it very well. A 1040 form in the U.S. tax code has a certain genre. It's an income tax form. And inside that form are certain elements, and those elements can be expected in any income tax form. First of all, one has the income elements, where one states what one earns. Next is the deduction elements, which states how much one has to pay to support one's family, etc. Then there's the expense elements, etc. So, just like there are genres in any literature, including tax genres and romance novels and mysteries, there are genres in Tehillim as well. Actually, there are genres in all the Tanakh, but let's focus on Tehillim right now. One genre is when an individual is crying out to God for help. Another one is when one is calling to God, or thanking God, I should say, for deliverance from some previous trouble. I could have a genre where an entire nation is singing God's praises. Each of these genres, and I am oversimplifying because like in any literature, genres can merge into one another as the creative artist, the poet, the writer attempts to write something new and original and meaningful by combining slightly dissimilar elements. I could make a romantic comedy, for instance. But nonetheless, the genres, each genre can be more or less identified, and each one has certain formal elements that the author will use to convey his message and that the audience could expect to hear so that it can be understood. Let's take a lament of the individual, where an individual complains or about his troubles, petitions God for help. This genre almost always, if not always, begins with a direct call to God, Hashem, Elokai, that kind of thing. What follows is then a series of formal elements which are not predictable in how they're used, but predictable in that they're going to show up. One could be a description of the problem. I have the following troubles. Another formal element which comes usually is a complaint against one's myself. Oh, look what I've done. Or a complaint against God. Why are you doing this to me? Or against one's enemies. Look what they are doing to me. There's usually a petition for God to save. And very often at the end, there is a promise that if God does save, if he comes to the rescue, the author will give praise or bring a sacrifice or do something to commemorate and thank God for coming through. Sometimes actually there's an admission of guilt, as in, I deserve all these troubles. Sometimes there's actually an assertion of innocence, which is, I don't deserve any of this. Now, as I mentioned before, even though a certain genre has these formal elements, and these formal elements help really identify to a certain degree the genre. By playing, when the author plays or emphasizes some elements over others, he can really steer our emotions and create a very original work of poetry which stands out and is unlike any other poetry. It's really original. And so it is with RT La 35, Lamed He, which is clearly a cry, a petition to God to help. And it is broken into three sections. Each one of these sections concludes with a specific formal element, specifically a promise to praise God should the redemption or when the redemption comes. But the meat of the poem leading up to the this thrice promise to praise God is complaints against the enemy over and over and over again. Almost with every verse, the focus is not so much on anything except for this is the enemy, this is why he should be hated, this is why God should fight them, this is why God should shame them, and this is why they should get what they deserve. Now, what's interesting is actually for Christians who really accept the Psalms and use the Psalms, our Tehillim, as a book of their prayers, this is probably the most difficult part of Tehillim, which they embrace as a general rule. Because for Christians, they're, you know, as part of a Christianity, there's a sense of turning the other cheek, of letting things go, of not smiting the enemy, of loving him until he repents. But this is simply not really the Jewish way. This is one of the cases where Christianity and Judaism really do differ. If an enemy, such as Amalek, the terrible Amalek, exists, and any nation which is immoral to the core, whose very existence forms a barrier to creating the type of world and civilization that God has commanded us to create, then unless they accept the seven Noahide laws, unless they accept basic morality, then they are to be warred against. We are not to turn the other cheek. We are to attempt to put them down and, if necessary, destroy them. Now, this does not mean we hate our enemies. And David never says that he hates the enemies in this psalm, or I think probably in any psalm. What he's saying is, and in fact, to prove the point that we don't hate our enemies, we have a custom during our Passover holiday that when we're talking about how the Egyptians lost their lives during the Exodus by drowning in the sea, we actually spill a little wine in commemoration for the fact that even though we had to fight them, and fight them we did and must, we still are very sad that they unfortunately had to lose their lives. However, our survival and our national mission depend on it, so we fight and we do not turn the other cheek, even though it can make us sad at times. And Psalms, which of course is written by Jews, by the greatest of Jews, by David and people who learned from him or preceded him, really comes back to this point to say that liars and sinners, when they are unrepentant, they must receive their just punishment, partially because if they don't, then God is made to look unjust or unfair when the good suffer and when the evil are left alone to prosper. Then that really is an indictment against God to a certain extent, besides being terrible for us. So nowhere is there more emphasis on the enemy and on what they deserve than in this Tehillah Lamed Hey, Psalm 35. And now, with that as an introduction, on to the psalm itself. L'David, Riva Adonai et Yirivai Lecham et Lochamai. A song of David, or actually just by David. O Lord, fight my fight and war against my foes. Hachazek Magen Vitzina Kuma Be'ezrati. Hold strong the shield and buckler and rise to my aid. According to Radak, the scenario is the same as it was in the last psalm. But it seems that this is said before David makes his escape from the Philistines and really is crying for that salvation. However, it can easily describe many other enemies that David fought over many tough wars during his lifetime. David clearly here is on the rocks and needs God's help desperately. V'harek chanit usgor likrat rodefai emor lenafshi yeshuatech ani. Swing your spear and close quarters against my pursuers. Proclaim to my soul, to myself, quote, I am your salvation, yeshuatech ani. Most of our medieval commentators see the word score, by the way, as a verb, meaning a form of defense. So I translate it as close quarters with them or engage. Modern scholars mostly see it as a noun, meaning a pike. So it matches the word chanit. Chanit to score means wave your pike and your spear. Yevoshuv yikalmu mevakshei nafshi yisogu achor v'yachburu choshevei ra'ati. Let them be shamed, let them be disgraced, those who pursue me. Note the word nafshi means my soul and myself, and it creates the sense that the author is kind of looking down on himself from above and begging for help as if he's begging for another person, which he realizes is himself. Continuing on with the pasuk, let them fall back and be embarrassed, those who plan evil against me. Again, always against the enemies. Let them be like chaff before a wind as the angel of the Lord pushes, i.e. the angel pushes them off like chaff with wind. And now there's, in the next verse, there's even more angelic aid. Yehi darkam choshech v'chalak lakot umalach Adonai rodefam. Let their way be dark and slippery as the angel of the Lord gives them chase, or as the messenger of the Lord, an angel, gives them chase. Note that in the last psalm, where David is assuring others that they will be saved just as he was saved from the Philistines, an angel of the Lord is called upon as a defense. Chone malach Adonai saviv l'reav v'yichal etzeim. An angel of the Lord camps around those who fear him, and he extricates them. That is, again, he helps the God-fearing. But following the emphasis of our psalm, the angel here is not on the defense at all. The angel here is quite on the offense. He brings it to the enemies. Also note that I'm translating all of the verbs in the jussive, which is like the cohortative that I spoke about in the last psalm, which means let them. It's a request. It's not God. Our psalmist does not know for sure that all of these things will happen against the enemy. He is requesting that they should happen to the enemy. And now David explains why the enemies deserve all of this. Ki chinam tamnuli shachat rishtam, chinam chafaru lenafshi, because for naught they did hide a destructive trap against me, for naught they dug, i.e. they dug a pit, against myself. Again, note the word nafshi. And so we go back to the lashing out at the enemies. Tivo eyu shoa lo yedav rishto asher taman til kedo bishoa yipol ba. Let an unheard of destruction, let the trap they hid for me be for them, let them fall in destruction into it. Now this verse and the previous verse are very difficult to translate word for word, but the general meaning is they came up to me with their traps, and let's hope they fall into them, their own traps, in the most terrible and destructive way. Now, after pouring it on against the enemy and what they deserve, and in detail how they should get it, the psalmist promises that he will give praise if all goes as asked. V'nafshi, again the word nefesh, v'nafshi tagil badunai tasis bishuato kol atzmotai tomarna Adonai micha mocha matzil ani men chazak mimenu v'ani v'evyon migozelo. And then my soul, myself, will exult in the Lord, or perhaps to the Lord. My soul will rejoice in his salvation. All of my bones, kol atzmotai. Note that this is one of the many words which is shared between this psalm and the previous one, which no doubt is what contributed to Radak's argument that this one is also dealing with the same situation of David's escape from the Philistines. Getting back to the pasuk, all of my bones will say, O Lord, who is like you, who rescues the poor from those stronger than him, and the poor and the downtrodden from those who thieve against him. Of course, the word gozel, he goes alone, need not be talking about a literal thievery, but stealing away of life, of honor, of freedom, of justice, etc. The second section of the psalm begins and continues with a return to lashing out at the enemy. But the second section differs in that the psalmist is now describing some of the terrible things that the enemy is guilty of. That is, it's really a detailed explanation of why the enemy is so bad, especially vis-a-vis his past relationship. That is, David will, as we will see, had a relationship with them, and their betrayal of that relationship is what makes them so vicious and malicious. Yikumun eidei Hamas asher lo yadati yisha'aluni. There arose malicious witnesses who demanded of me that which I did not know. So what we have here is a metaphor of a court case where somebody, where someone as a false witness, a malicious witness, falsely claims that a defendant has damaged them or owes them money, and now is unjustly asking for compensation from a very innocent person. Yishalemuni ra'a tachatova. They pay me back evil in place of good, i.e. I did good things for them and they paid me back ill in order to bereave myself, my soul. That is, they wanted to cause my soul to be bereaved. Again, the word nafshi. Vani bachalotam levushi sak. Inati batsom nafshi utfilati achikita shuv. But me, va'ani, when they fell ill, b'chalotam, I wore sackcloth. That is, I prayed for them. I suffered for them. I identify with them. Getting back to the verse, I afflicted myself with fasting, and my prayers returned on my breast. I think the sense of this last bit, my prayers returned on my breast, is as follows. I prayed that I should absorb their troubles, like one who says, oh God, let it happen to me, you know, bring all the pain on me and not on them. Or perhaps it's actually an accusation that they, the enemy, when they got a chance, they threw my kindness, they threw my prayers right back at my chest, like saying, oh, thanks for your help, but we don't need you anymore. But I think the first translation is better, since David is still in the process of describing the fair and kind ways that he behaves in contrast to them, but the way he behaved to them when they were in bad shape. Kireya ki'achli hitalachti ka'avel aim koder shachoti. I paced to and fro like for a comrade, like for my brother. I bent myself over in darkness like a man mourning for his mother. That is, I treated you not only like a friend, but like a brother, like a mother. I poured myself into you. Uvtsal'i, but when I limped, i.e. when the tables were turned and I was the one suffering. Uvitsal'i samachu v'ne'esafu, ne'esfu alai nechim v'lo yadati, kar'u v'lo damu. They gathered, when I limped, they gathered in glee, these cripples, these creeps, sort of a colloquial translation, but it's kind of nice. These creeps gather against me in a way, or perhaps for reasons that I can't understand. Alay nechim v'lo yadati, nesfu alay nechim v'lo yadati. I don't understand or I don't know. Notice he contrasts, it's a nice contrast between their permanent defect, nechim, against a more temporary limp that afflicts him at Solea. Anyway, getting back to the pasuk, karu v'lo damo, they tore perhaps at my flesh, and did not cease. Or perhaps they tore up with laughter and did not silence themselves. But the bottom line is they really went at me, and they just kept going and going and going. B'chanfei la'agei ma'og charok alai shinemo. Okay, this is a very tough verse. Ma'og seems to be a kind of a low form of food, like a gristle. I'm basing this on chapter 17 of the book of Kings 1, verse 12, which Radak cites. So perhaps a best translation or a good translation might be, they snap their teeth, charok alai shinemu, against me, like one who chews irreverently and mockingly on gristle, like they're chewing me up and spitting me out. But one thing I'm sure of, because the verse is very hard to translate, is the word chanaf, bechanfei, which means not only irreverence or an irreligious behavior, but it has the connotation of an adulterer or one who betrays a friend or a lover, which fits perfectly into the theme of section 2. They take and they take and they take when they need it, but the minute the tables are turned, not only don't they help, but they take advantage and attack their former supporters who are now weakened. And now, again, which enemy is David talking about? It could be any number of them. It could be the Plishtim, like the Radak says. It could be the Moabites, who befriended him while he was on top of them, but as soon as he left, they betrayed him and killed his parents, at least according to Chazal, and that seems to be the, according to the rabbis, and it seems to be what actually happened. But it's probably unwise to try to pin it down to a specific enemy, because what makes the psalm so universal is that it could really apply to many situations and many times. Anyway, getting back to the verse, Adonai, to the Tehillim, Adonai, Kama tir'eh hashiva nafshi mishoehem mikafirim yichidati. And now, after slamming the enemy, the petition for God's help, we finally get a petition for God to come in, which, as I mentioned before, is a very common formal element, although here it can't even shed a light really against all the aspersions against the enemy. O Lord, how long will you look on? Revitalize me, or bring me back from their destruction. Revitalize myself. in this case, not nafshi, but yechidati, myself, from young lions. And again, look to the previous psalm, Psalm 34, for similar language like kfirim and the metaphors that I spoke about then. So ending section 2, we again have a promise to praise God when salvation comes. Odecha b'kahal rav ba'am atzum ahalaleka. I will extol you in a great gathering, that is, when with a great many people around. I will praise you in a mighty nation, which means, you know, when they're all at their strongest, that's when I will sing out to you so they recognize your glory. Note that the word odecha, I don't translate as thanks, which is a very common translation, but as praise, which is kind of a synonym to the word halel ahaleka. Now, on to section 3, and no surprise, once again, we go right back to the enemies. Al yismachu li oyevei sheker, sonai chinam yikritsu ayin. Don't let my lying enemies rejoice over me, the causeless haters of me, these winkers of their eyes, which apparently was some kind of like a kind of obnoxious way of showing that you're above somebody or you're going to take advantage of somebody. Kilo shalom yidaberu, v'al regei eretz divrei mirmot yachshovun. Because they speak no peace, or perhaps shalom in the sense of shalem, they don't speak completely, they don't speak truthfully. And regei, aval regei aretz, regei is a very difficult word, but perhaps the sense is from the word ragu, or resting, that is the downtrodden, or literally ones who are lying down on the earth. Against them, they plan out false words. And this returns to the earlier metaphor of an unjust attack, kind of like in a courtroom scenario. Vayarchivu alai pihem, they widen their mouths against me, in the sense, perhaps in the sense of swallowing whole, perhaps in the sense of giving false testimony in the courtroom metaphor, or perhaps to say the next words in the pasuk, amaru, heach, heach, ra'atai neinu. They say, ha, ha. And yes, the Hebrew word heach means ha. They said, our eyes have seen it. Which probably means, we've seen our plans and plots come out the way we wanted to, or we've seen you, the person that we're attacking, fall victim, and that's the sense of ra'atayinenu, our eyes have seen. Now, in contrast to the seeing of the enemy, a very negative seeing, the psalmist calls on God to see. Ra'ita Adonai, al techarash Adonai, al tirchak mi meni. Look, O Lord, note that the verb is in the past tense, ra'ita, not to imply that God has already looked, but that the author is so confident that God will look. It's as if it's already done. Look, O Lord, don't remain silent, O Lord. Don't distance yourself from me. The desperation is clear. In fact, one could even say that David is speaking to God with a certain amount of chutzpah, telling him to look. But the truth is, we know that when a relationship is true and firm, then one can really speak the truth without it being disrespectful. And now the quote-unquote chutzpah, which really is only possible between true partners of a covenant, continues. And the metaphor of a court case also continues. Ha'ira v'hakitza l'mishpati Elohai Elohai v'adonai l'rivi. Ha'ira v'hakitza l'mishpati Elohai v'adonai l'rivi. My God, arouse and wake up to my court case. My Lord, arouse and wake up to my dispute. Shofteini k'tzidkadcha Adonai, Elohai, v'al yismichu li, judge me based on your own righteousness. And here is where we see that there really is no chutzpah, since the author is affirming with all of his heart that God is righteous, and all he has to do is sort of come to the court case, and David, the psalmist, will come out as the winner. Judge me based on your own righteousness, so that they will not rejoice over me. Al yomru b'li bam, he'ach nafshenu, Al yomru bila'anuhu. Let them not say to themselves, ah, our souls, nafshenu, we win. And again, the note of the use of the word souls or selves or nefesh, although here in a negative sense, because they're saying we're the ones who are right. Let them not say, bila'anu, we have devoured him. And it's the fact that, it's the very fact that they rejoice, which seems to be the sure sign, according to David, of their unworthiness. Yevoshuv yachbru yachtav smechei ra'ati, yilbishu voshed uchlima hamagdilim malai. Let them be ashamed. Let them be altogether disgraced. Those who rejoice in my troubles, let them, those who raise themselves above me. And now, at the end of the third and final section, we turn again to the promise of praise. But here, there's something new. It's not only that the psalmist will give praise by himself after the salvation, but those, all those who supported him and all those who supported right from wrong, they will have the opportunity to give praise as well. Yaronu v'yismichu chafetzei ratzidki. Not chafetzei ra'ati like we had before, but chafetzei tzidki. V'yomru tamid yigdal Adonai hechafet shalom avdo. Let all those who desired me to be vindicated sing out in praise and rejoice. And let them also say, yigdal Adonai, the Lord is great. Or perhaps the Lord is always great. The one who desires peace, completeness, well-being, and truth for his servant. That is, God is great because he desires peace and well-being for the people who serve him, for me, his servant. And then the psalmist concludes on a personal note, "Ulshoni te'ageh tzidkecha kol hayom te'ilatecha." And let my tongue, or perhaps here we affirm, my tongue will speak your righteousness. It will every day speak your praise.